Loose ball. Ewing goes up. The basket counts.
He gets it over to the doctor. Tie ball game. Here's a shot. Julius. He scores! He scores!
Anthony for three. Bang! That one goes down and the game is tied.
Here's Durant moving on Tucker. He turns. He shoots. Yes!
Talking Knicks, Nets, and all things across the association, this is Pick and Pod on WFUV Sports.
Happy Friday and welcome into another episode of Pick and Pod. Ben Simmons had another back surgery, meaning he's done for the year, questionable for the start of next year, but knowing Ben Simmons is always kind of questionable. The Knicks are back winning games. OG Anunoby is back, which seems to be everything for the New York Knicks right now. We'll get into that. And also, the Celtics really seem to be the most dominant team we've had in quite a few years. The opportunity to be the first 65-win team since the 17-18 Rockets. It's a loaded half hour. We got my guys Will Talent, Brendan Chory. I'm Miles Grossman. Guys, happy Friday. We'll start it off with some basketball. And I want to start off with Ben Simmons. The Brooklyn Nets announced just yesterday, Ben Simmons had successful back surgery, his second back surgery in 3 years. Will, it's getting to the point where Ben Simmons is probably the worst overpay in recent memory. I mean, $37 million this year, guaranteed $40 million next year. It is historic to me for a couple of reasons, just because the contracts have gotten in this direction where we got guys making $40 million a year, and then we also got guys not being productive. Would you agree that this is one of the more historic overpays in NBA history?
You know, it's tough. It's a tough stance, Miles, because, you know, kind of all three of us on this show right now, we watched Ben Simmons from the LSU days. We're not old, but we're old enough to say, hey, yo, we've kind of seen this from the beginning. And it's more to me, I look at it more as like unfortunate rather than it being an overpay. I'm not going to jump over there. Yeah, on paper, it's definitely like, man, you're going to pay a guy $40 million a year on his third back surgery in what, 2 years, something like that. And to give more details on that, it was a microscopic partial discectomy to alleviate the nerve impingement in his back. Nerve impingement, something that I believe that was a reoccurring injury with him in his last back surgery. Something with nerve impingement, definitely not good. But I see it more as unfortunate, Miles, because if you told me 4 years ago that Ben Simmons was going to have this contract, I would have been like, that's fine. He's a three-time All-Star. Sure, the shooting never came around, but the point guard ability was there. He was a three-time NBA All-Star, back to back to back. And then, you know, I think some things got to his head a little bit. Definitely a lot of outside noise. The Sixers got a little better, and that kind of forced him out of his role in Philadelphia. So overall, Miles, I see it more of as an unfortunate situation. And if you're going to look at it in a technical sense, yeah, it's an overpay if you're the Brooklyn Nets and you need to find a way to kind of mitigate this money. That's a lot of money going to someone who's played less than 60 games for you.
I'm gonna agree there. I think it's a little more unfortunate than overpay. He should not be making this much money, but I think the main reason that I think that is because of how often he's actually playing in games. He has been injured so much over the past few years, and you even said it, Will. 4 years ago, Ben Simmons was a fantastic point guard, great court vision, could get to the rim, great defense too, and then all of a sudden, I guess he got inside his own head, someone else got in his head, and he especially thought in that playoff run when they lost to the Hawks in that series a few years ago is when it kind of really turned around for him. And that's when you kind of saw that he wasn't the same player anymore. And so it's a bit of that. And then his injury history over the past few years just hasn't been great. And to be making this much money when you're only playing a quarter of the season at best it's really unfortunate.
Yeah, the Brooklyn Nets are sort of kind of just in, you know, asset management. How do you handle this quickly depreciating asset? There was a time where this was reasonable. I mean, when Sean Marks committed to Ben Simmons being kind of this core piece, this franchise player, it was bold, but it didn't seem out of bounds. The guy had you know, he's 6'10". He can move like a point guard when he's healthy. He can move the rock extremely well. He's an elite defender when he's healthy. Like you guys say, the ceiling was there. It's just pretty spectacular how quickly Ben Simmons as an asset has depreciated. I mean, when they committed to this deal 3-4 years ago, $40 million was, we know contracts are trending in this direction, but to pay Ben Simmons $40 million 3 years ago in 2024 is shocking. And I mean, now, you know, having him have this back surgery is kind of just, well, how can we finally get something out of Ben Simmons? Next year is the final year of his Brooklyn Nets contract, right? He's going to be a free agent following the 2025 season. So, you know, hopefully if you're the Brooklyn Nets, you know, from their perspective, he's going to come back and be a key piece. It's just at this point, guys, there's no reason to believe that. Going into this year, I believe that. He was coming off this exact same procedure, and he was supposed to be slowly but surely turning into that superstar. I mean, when you saw him in training camp, he was supposed to be that guy. Those press conferences, that was what the meetings were about. It was, oh, Ben Simmons can be this guy again. It's just hard to believe it now after feeling like bamboozled once again. If you're Sean Marks, Will, do you think even he's questioning whether Ben Simmons has that superstar potential coming into 2025?
You know, I if I'm Sean Marks, Miles, I'm going to say no, because look at the very small sample size that we saw from him this year. He played, what, like 10 games this year? I think it was
literally 12.
It was something very, very minuscule of the schedule for this year. And he had a triple-double. You know, he was putting up points. He was putting up stat sheets that resemble his game, that resemble, you know, maybe it wasn't, you know, it was like 10, 10, and 10, but whatever. He was filling out the stat sheet. He had that triple-double comparison from when he was drafted. So, yeah, I do think it's there. It wasn't in Philly. He immediately got thrown into the Brooklyn Nets situation. You know, he was kind of on a bad end of a bad situation. He was leaving a bad situation, and he was kind of a piece in not a great situation. So maybe it is a case of just another change of scenery for him. Maybe he needs a smaller market. Philly and New York, you know, New York maybe a little bit bigger of a market than Philly, but both cities in close proximity to each other, both hold 4 major sports teams, you know, big markets. Maybe he just needs another change of scenery to get back in that right space, because sometimes I really feel like that's what it is for him, just getting in that right space.
I like that point about the smaller market. I think what it really is for him is for him to get his confidence back. And I think we saw flashes of that this year whenever he was able to play in those 12 games. We saw flashes of the old Ben Simmons. We saw his playmaking ability out there. We saw him able to attack the rim and play good defense. We saw the old Ben Simmons on the court, and I think we saw him start to get that confidence back. And then it's unfortunate that the injury happened. But I think you bring him to a smaller market like that, it'll be easier for him to not even – get the confidence that back that he had this year, but even surpass it, go back to that old Ben Simmons from Philly from his first few years and the level of confidence he had then in his game. And I think we could definitely see that somewhere in the near future with a smaller market team.
Yeah, I think if you're the Brooklyn Nets, I mean, you only really have sub 20 games to go here. You're currently the 11 seed, 26-40 on the year, 3.5 games back from Atlanta to make the play-in. And I think that 3.5 game gap might just be enough for Atlanta to hold on. I mean, I know Trae Young is still a question mark for the rest of the year, but if you're Brooklyn, you're going to be probably a sub-500 club the rest of the year. To try and close a 3.5 game gap against a middling Atlanta team is going to be tough. And in my eyes, they're going to go into the offseason as that 11 or as that 12 outside of the play-in and wonder where they are. Ben Simmons is still, of course, eating up a ton of cap space for this year, but it does seem like there's it's a bit directionless. I mean, Sean Marks is now in year seven here. He's the one committing to Ben Simmons. Obviously, there was the point where Kyrie, Harden, Durant, all of that was under Marks temporarily, but it's directionless at this point. Do you guys see Sean Marks maybe on his way out following 2024?
I think it's all going to depend on what happens with Mikal Bridges, to be honest with you, Miles. What can they do with Mikal Bridges? You know, you traded Kevin Durant for Mikal Bridges, amongst other things. But Mikal Bridges was the main piece of this, implosion. It was an implosion of what they wanted, what they wanted it to be. They wanted to force a culture. It didn't work. And here we are, you have Mikal Bridges. So he's a great ball player. He is a great ball player. What are they going to do around him? What are they going to do to make this team better? I know they don't really have a lot of room, but to me, you know, it's targeting the draft. Obviously, when you don't have picks, it makes it a little tough. But, you know, maybe getting some back from Phoenix and then these prior trades. You know, it's tough when those teams that you traded these stars to as well are good ball clubs and have bad picks. So, you know, they're not in a good spot. They're going to have to do you said it before, Miles, more of this like quick retool. They're going to have to utilize the picks that they have and maximize them, not just utilize them, but maximize them. They have to get the most out of what they have, and they got to spend their money right. They have to spend their money right. And it's going to start with Mikal Bridges at the end of the day. He is the piece that you traded a top 10 scorer of all time for. So it's a work in progress and a wait and see over in Brooklyn.
I think there's a good chance he's out after 2024. I mean, you look at what he's had to work with, and he had, given they were injured a lot of the year at different times, but he did have the big trio in Harden, Kyrie, and KD, and that amounted to nothing. And then you trade away all those superstars and you get a bunch of good role players, but you don't really get a superstar guy back. Like, Mikal Bridges is a great player, but he hasn't quite proven that he could be that number one option on a good team. And so you have a bunch of these guys that if they get a superstar, it's a great team. You have these guys like Cam Johnson, Dorian Finney-Smith, Cam Thomas even. I mean, you have these guys who could come in and make a difference if they have that one player who can kind of come in and bring him over the top, but they haven't went out and gotten anyone since that they traded away Durant, Irving, and Harden. And so if they keep it like this, where they're not making moves, and they don't really have as much money to spend because of this Ben Simmons contract too. And so if you aren't able to go out and get a superstar like that, what can you really expect from this team of good role players without a superstar? And at that point, it's like, well, where do you turn then?
Yeah, at the moment, it is genuinely a difficult position. 26 and 40, 3.5 games outside of the play-in. And heading into this offseason, there's not much excitement to speak about. I'm not sure who's going to want to come to Brooklyn on top of that. But we're going to transition a little bit to Manhattan's team and the New York Knicks in the 4 seed currently, 39 and 27. And that would be a difficult playoff stretch where they have to be in that four, got to play some young teams like the, you know, the Pacers, possibly the 76ers would be in that path towards the Eastern Conference Finals. But, you know, OG Anunoby is back and they seem to be winning games. And that's really where I want to start. OG Anunoby, when he's out there, the New York Knicks are 15-2 since they traded for him. It's a pretty unbelievable run, but it also makes me sort of uncomfortable about where they're at without him. Does this sort of feel like a miracle run that can't last forever after the trade? Will, does it make you a little uncomfortable that, you know, OG seems to be the only way New York can win?
Nah, not at all. Not at all. I honestly, I don't even see it that way too, because, you know, look, you got to look at it this way too. This was a 3-seed team. This team was a 3-seed before Randall and OG went out for extensive periods of time. And where are they now? They're still 5-seed. They're still in a series seed right now. They're not in the play. They didn't dip all the way down to the play-in. Sure, did they dip a little bit? Yeah, because the teams in front of them stayed a little bit more consistent. You know, injuries happen. But we got to highlight the play of Deuce McBride and the durability of Isaiah Hartenstein, who has been banged up in the absence of Mitchell Robinson and is putting together a career season. Josh Hart, he's had like three triple doubles, and not just triple doubles, but like 20 rebound triple doubles, 14 assist triple doubles. So, you know, I'm not all that concerned. I'm more happy. It's like, all right, great. They can win a ball game now without limping across the finish line, because they were very, very hot and cold. More like, let's say, we'll break it down this way. In their last 10, they were consistently a 4-6 team in the absence of OG Anunoby. I think we can get behind that. But that didn't kill them that much to the point where they are still a 5 seed, and there's room. Their month of April is not that bad. They play the Bulls 3 times, a team that they pounded as soon as they got OG Anunoby. I was at that game, and it was one of his best games to start. It was like his second or third game. He was lights out. They're playing the Bulls 3 times in April. So to be honest with you, Miles, nah, I'm not concerned. I'm more excited. It's just another piece to get going with on a team that's been clicking when it seems like things just aren't clicking for them.
I'm not actually disagree with you there, Will. I think it is a cause of concern, because I think, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and act like OG Anunoby is a bad player, but he's not like the guy on that team. He's a great player. He's a great 3-and-D guy who can take over at the end of games when he needs to, and he can shoot the ball really well. But if this is what happens when you lose OG Anunoby, it worries me. What happens if you lose a Brunson? I mean, that's an extreme, obviously, but if you're gonna dip this much when you lose a good role player in OG, if you lose like a Brunson or a Randall, and you're playing good teams, like I mean, if it's close to the playoff, if you're playing good teams like that and you lose a guy like this, even if OG's caliber, if you lose him again, then it causes for some concern, because you're not playing these teams at the bottom of the standings anymore. You're not playing these Bulls. You're not playing these Pistons, these Wizards teams anymore. It's going to be all playoff teams from there on. So to me, that is a little bit of a cause of concern, because, I mean, a 4-6 team is not a team that will take you all the way.
Well, let me interject real quick, too, before you go, Miles. I agree with you 100%, Brendan. If they lose Brunson, it's like it's over. And we've seen that. We've seen that. There, Brunson was hurt a couple weeks ago before the All-Star break. We saw that starting lineup. They barely put together 75 points. Even with Brunson against the Sixers, they scored 73 points. Mm-hmm. That happens. But without Brunson, without any of them, with any of them being OG, Julius, or Jalen Brunson, without any of them, it's moot. It's done. But I do think with just Brunson, they could at least compete in a series. And now getting OG back, because we have to keep in mind, he was just out for a month. So the idea is he is back now. He is here for the remaining 15, 16 regular season games, whatever the case may be. And I think, you know, even without Randall, I think this Knicks team could win the first series that they play. A second, I don't know. But this team right now, without Randall and with OG presumably in the rotation now consistently again, I think this team can definitely still win one playoff series. And they are the 4 seed. They are the 4 seed, by the way. They're exactly. The 4 seed. They dropped one spot.
Yeah, above still, quite a few decent Eastern teams right below them, but they are the 4, is exactly right. But the kind of unspoken theme about this is that Randall is kind of, you know, he's out and he's progressing, but he's progressing pretty slowly. And when you come back from that, I believe it's just the dislocated shoulder, you know, that's an uncomfortable thing to come back from. I know we have the most recent update I have written down here, Ian Begley of SNY. He's shooting, he's doing individual work. He can do, you know, that sort of thing, but nothing more than light contact. And I'm sort of concerned, you know, we don't have that much time here. As we said, you know, under 20 games left. What concerns me most, Will, is that Randall might come back, yes, but Randall's going to have to get his footing during a very pivotal stretch of the year. Will, what kind of Julius Randall are we looking at? And in your eyes, does it worry you that, you know, he might be getting his legs under him during the playoffs?
See, this is a great question, Miles, because we were talking about this like exact thing actually last week on Pick and Pod. And my stance on it is still the same, and that is Julius Randle is a very adaptatious player. He has adapted the way that he plays. I may have just made up a word there, by the way. I have no idea. But adaptatious. But he can, he's very
adaptive.
Adaptive. Think,
yeah.
He's very adaptive. And he's adapted the way that he's played. He was primarily a high volume scorer until this year. And we've seen more 45 points for Jalen Brunson last night. We've seen more games out of Jalen Brunson like that this year than we've seen out of Julius Randle, who's taken more of a, I'm going to do a little bit more and go for that double-double rather than the 35 points. You know, maybe we'll go 20 and 16. You know, we've seen that more in Randle. So I think his ability to adapt is what's going to help him, and he's going to be able to fit the mold. We may not get all NBA Julius Randle right away, and you shouldn't expect that, but we're going to get an all NBA player. We're going to get somebody who has been there before and is capable of adapting his role need be, because the Knicks are going to be in full swing by the time that he's ready to come back. Got to anticipate OG is going to be like ready and ramped up by the time Julius is like back in the rotation. Mm-hmm. So once again, I'm fine with where they're at. I think they all got hurt at the best possible times. Even Mitchell Robinson could still come back in about a month. So, you know, we'll see. But honestly, guys, I'm going to stay stand pat. I'm really not all that concerned and more confident in where the Knicks are at right now.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's not ideal for him to be coming back to, and during the stretch and even first series of the playoffs if he's back. But I mean, you hit it right on the head with this one, Will. I mean, he's not coming in and stepping in and having to be that number one guy. You have Brunson now to take on the scoring load, and you have Randle to do the dirty work on the boards and put up a good 20 and 10. And so I think he's going to be very capable of doing that when he steps in. And maybe he gets off to a slow start in his first few games back, but he's not having to come in and give you that 30, 35 points a game, which is huge, because this having Brunson just takes that whole load off of his shoulders, which then in turn makes the return a whole lot easier. So I'm not worried at all. I think he'll step in. I think he'll do just fine.
And one thing I do want to touch on before we transition away from the Knicks is, you already touched on it, Will, but Hartenstein, I mean, this guy has held it down throughout the injuries. And of course, he's battled injuries of his own. He's kind of proved that toughness, but he's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. He wraps up this 2-year deal with the Knicks. And, you know, he seems like a guy who might get a serious bag in free agency. It might be difficult for the Knicks to keep him. At least, I mean, we know he's going to have a decent amount of suitors. It might be you might get a 3-year in this NBA. He could get 25 mil a year. Right?
Easily. I would say based on this year, I would say his range is like 18 to 20 right now. Which he's proven that
Hartenstein,
he's
imagine saying that 3-4 years
starting
ago.
NBA center. Yeah, I know. I think a 3-year deal is perfect for him. I don't know if the Knicks are there. He's doing the job this year. You know, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. But I agree with you on that light take right there, Miles. He's definitely a 3-year, could be 18 million a year kind of guy for the way that he's played just in this season alone as a starter.
And just knowing the Knicks, if that's the case, he's going to be hard to keep, Brendan.
Yeah. I mean, he's really stepped in and filled a role that the Mitchell Robinson hasn't been able to fill because of the injury. I mean, you look at how he's been playing this season, and there really hasn't been a super noticeable difference in production there. And I think he'll definitely go and get a bag in free agency. He'll go get a few years, a 20, ish a year, and teams will be willing to pay him that.
Absolutely. And now, 100%. You know, taking a look overall at the NBA, it does seem like the Boston Celtics are the team to beat this year. 52-14. You know, in the East, that's 9.5 games above the second squad in the Bucks. And I mean, obviously the Bucks have fluctuated, the Doc Rivers, the it all seems like it might need a little bit more time to gel in Milwaukee, but overall, I'm not sure if we've had this dominant of a one overall in the NBA kind of since that Warriors team. I know we looked it up previously, Will. It's that 2017-2018 Houston Rockets team that was the last team in the NBA to reach 65 wins. Of course, the Boston Celtics will have to go 13-3 in their final 16 to do that. But the Boston Celtics are that good, or they might have a chance to wrap up 13-3 and be that first team. And is that not 8 years, if I'm not mistaken? I mean, Will, this is the most dominant team we've had in the NBA in a long time.
Yeah, and you know, it kind of, we're talking about the 73-9 team. I mean, even it makes that era of basketball even more special, putting this into perspective, because we're talking about a team leading the way at 65 wins. I remember very clearly that 73-9 year. There were multiple teams with 60-plus winning seasons. The Spurs were one of them. Don't even get recognized. This is one of the best teams of all time in a season where they didn't even matter. Now the Celtics, you know, they're kind of taken away. They're taking it away here in the East. I think, you know, we're talking about a pre-show. I think they kind of will get paced a little bit with the Western Conference matchups. I think if they match up against the Nuggets, that would be a very, very good NBA Finals. You're going to need, if a team is going to compete with the Celtics in the West, they're going to be experienced. Yeah, hypothetically, let's say the Lakers or the Warriors make a run out of the play-in, like the Lakers last year. If they make a run, I'm targeting teams with playoff experience to take down the Celtics, because the Young Bucks that are taking care of business right now in the West, I love what they're doing. I don't see championship yet, though.
Yeah, I mean, this team has been the team to beat this season, but I'm hesitant to say for the rest of the year they are, only because they haven't had much playoff success in recent history. They've made it to the finals once a couple of years ago, but it's every year for this team, and I know it as a Cowboys fan, and I hear it from Celtics fans all the time. This is the year that we're gonna win it all, and then you get disappointed in the playoffs. And so that's why I'm so hesitant to say this is the team, this is the year. But they're looking really good. They're looking really scary. And I would not be shocked if they made a run.
And Will, you bring up an interesting point when you talk about how special that 9-loss squad was for those Golden State Warriors. Because that year, there were some special teams. Like you said, 60-plus win teams. This year, it seems we got the opposite in all these middling teams. You look at the middle of the pack for the West, the middle of the pack for the East. Something about it is every NBA team is a tad more even. I don't really know what leads to that. But, you know, when you got all those 60-win teams back there, all these middling teams in 2024, what do you think it is?
I'll tell you right now. Because I think about this, and I really think about how special, you know, like when we were in middle school, early high school, how special that NBA was. The league right now is run by rookies. I mean, Victor Wembanyama is going to win the Defensive Player of the Year. Chet Holmgren is a leading force on the number one seed in the Western Conference. So Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's his number one on the same team. He's 25. That brand of basketball 10 years ago, the 35-year-olds now were running the league. And those guys are still playing. And at a high level. I'm talking KD, Bron, Curry, all these guys playing at 35 years old at an exceptionally high level. Levels that we haven't seen before. That's why I think we have this, because it's kind of the rookies doing rookie things and getting into their own, but the old guys really not, you know, not taking a step back from the new blood, so to say.
Yeah, I mean, I find that that's actually really interesting. I mean, looking at the standings, you got these teams like the Warriors and the Lakers and the Suns who. I mean, you hit it. You said it well. I mean, the old guys per se still playing at a high level. And then you look at some of the other teams, and you have, I mean, you look at even like the Magic. Paolo Banchero is playing really well this season. You got guys like Luka coming out. Jokic still decently young. You got Shai, who's a top three MVP candidate. I mean, you have these super young guys playing on the same level as these older guys, and I think that that is a good reason for that.
It is pretty amazing when you take a look at this West, how compact it is. 46-20, 46-20 for the top two, and then within seven games of that, you have six other teams. It's weird how you have it. It's a pretty amazing phenomenon, pardon me. Guys, that's going to do it for this episode. It's been fun. Will Talent, Brendan Shorey, I've been Miles Grossman. One more episode of Pick and Pod in the books. As always, a production of WFUV Sports.